I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man, I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow.
Good evening, Vashon Island. I am Megan Hastings, and this is the Cats and Jammer Follies, a travel story show. And today we have on a beautiful friend of mine named Marta Lang Lamara. In fact, she was one of the first friends I met when I moved to Vashon Island a million years ago, when I worked at the original Minglement, which is now where the auction house is. She came in, was doing some shopping, and we started talking. And it was love at first sight. Welcome to the show, Marta.
Oh, what a beautiful introduction, Megan. Thank you. It was love at first sight.
I know. And here we are. Was it 18 years later?
Yep.
I know. We've had some good times over all these years.
That's right.
But today, we're here to talk about your travels. You are somebody who has done a lot of traveling, and in particular in South America and in Mexico and in Central America as well, or no?
I have not made it to Central America. The southernmost part of Mexico is the closest I've been.
That's awesome. Well, today we're going to go over some stuff that you've traveled and seen. In 1988, at the age of 17, you began traveling abroad with the Amigos program to Central Mexico. Will you tell me about how you got involved with that, the Amigos, and tell me what exactly that is and their mission?
Yes. So at the time, back in the mid-80s, several Vashon High School students had been doing this wonderful volunteer program in, like you said, Mexico, Central America, South America. And in particular, Anita Lopez and Toby Holmes had come back from their experiences sharing stories and had really inspired me. And I'd been a student of Spanish for a few years and had been in love with the language and was also looking for opportunities to get off of Vashon.
Yeah, I can imagine.
As a young person, it felt a little bit too close-knit, and I was looking for international travel opportunities. And so based on my friend's experiences, I applied and was accepted to the program, and it came with about a 6 to 8 month training period where I would make a weekly trip into Seattle to the Mass Valley and train with other volunteers in basic kind of cultural competency stuff, a little bit of language stuff, learning about health and safety strategies when we were going to be in rural parts of Latin America.
What kind of stuff, when you say volunteer, like what kind of stuff would they have you volunteer for once you're like, where were you in Central Mexico?
So my first summer I was in Guanajuato, Mexico, and the program we were doing there was basically a community sanitation program, which is a fancy way of saying we were building outhouses with the community. So
So glamorous.
Yes, the staff would go out early and recruit families to be host families for us. And I don't think they were getting paid. I had a discussion about this with someone recently. And my experience when I became a leader in the organization was that these rural families were donating housing and food in support of our efforts to improve community sanitation. So we would bring...
Wow, that's really amazing.
The supplies, the concrete, and the different basic supplies to build what was called the loza, the floor of the toilet, and then work with the local community to identify households, dig the holes, build the floor, and then hopefully finish it off with a little casita for privacy. And the goal being to reduce the occurrence of dysentery and
sure.
Stuff like that. So, at that point, and I'm sure to this day folks are still, especially young children, are dying from dysentery that could be preventable with better
hygiene.
Hygiene. And then we did some dental hygiene stuff. You know, we handed out toothbrushes and things.
Aww.
And I was a very idealistic young person at 17. Ran into a lot of obstacles in terms of community engagement. My Spanish wasn't that great. And, of course, these folks were doing their survival jobs. They were farming. They were in different industries in the region. And so getting able-bodied folks to dedicate their time and energy to
was that hard to recruit people?
It was a tricky task. And
mm-hmm.
so we built some successful facilities, but over the years, and I'm sure other guests who've done similar work or done community service or volunteerism in the developing world will tell you as well that really, I feel like I got the most out of the experience. I may have made some small contributions in these communities, but the world that was opened up to me through the language, through the generosity.
Oh, I can imagine.
All of those things.
Yeah, tell me, like, what were your first impressions as a young American traveling to Central Mexico or just in the Latin countries in general? You obviously really respond to these communities because you came back to Vashon, and then you would do 2 summers in Paraguay, and then you went back and did a summer in Oaxaca.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was, my first impressions, well, the city of Guanajuato is a beautiful colonial city, and we arrived there and did about a week of in-country training. We lived in an elementary school on the outskirts of town and then would do day trips in and to the beautiful colonial town with this incredible central market and beautiful architecture and the boyhood home of Diego Rivera. And I was just completely captivated by the beauty of the market, the flowers, the fresh fruit, the abundance.
Oh, I can imagine the colors were just so beautiful.
Yeah, so I was completely smitten with that component. And then they took us out and dropped us off in these rural, literally middle of nowhere villages at the end of these long, dusty dirt roads, and there would be a church and a school, and the original family that I was partnered with, I was there for a two-month stay, and so they broke it into 2 4-week terms. So the first 4 weeks, I was with a family, and I can't even remember the name of the village for that first stay. And they put us up in a little barn in their courtyard. And when I asked about where we were going to be using the bathroom, they pointed to the pig pen. And
oh,
so for the first several weeks of my stay, before we built an outhouse for this family, that was where we had to do our business, was in the pig pen, which was right next to the kitchen. So it was a very... Even though I'd been raised on Vashon with no indoor plumbing.
With hippies.
And I was a hippie. I had an outhouse until I went to college. But this was a new level of rustic and funky that I had never quite experienced before. So.
And if you met Marta today, she's a pretty fancy lady. You would not anticipate her doing her business in a pig pen.
So,
it's good visual for me.
I handled it better than, you know, so they put you in partners, and my two other partners were, one of them was from a really fancy neighborhood outside of Chicago, and the other one was like a Boston prep school kid, and they were having an even harder time.
I can imagine that didn't go over very well. Yeah,
and,
so amigos.
Very simple diet. I'm just going to say the other impression was just the simple diet. You know, we lived on fried eggs and tortillas and beans for the entire time. And it was, you know, there was no variety. So it was a lot of like just adjusting to the simplicity of the diet, the limited amount of food that was available to us, limited amounts of fresh water, those types of things. So it was a pretty amazing wake up call.
I imagine you came home very grateful for what you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
It's amazing how those kinds of situations will really put everything in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So after Guanajuato, you went to Paraguay. Will you tell
I
us
did.
About Paraguay? Because I feel that that's a place that Americans don't really talk about very much. I mean, unless it's a community within that community, so, you know, but I personally, I don't know very much about it as a
country.
I didn't
know much about it at the time either. It had, you know, had, it's one of the only two landlocked countries in South America. So Paraguay and Bolivia share that honor. So they don't have any access to the sea and or rivers that I think that that can allow commerce to the sea. And so that's put them in kind of a precarious socioeconomic position.
But one thing I did look up, though, just because I didn't want to be completely ignorant of Paraguay, is that, yes, it is a completely landlocked country, but they have one of the largest one of the largest navies in South America, which is kind of funny.
Oh, that's hilarious. That sounds very Paraguayan. So it was also kind of, you know, it's had a sordid history, political, economic history, which I'm not super familiar with. And it borders, it has Brazil and Argentina are some of the countries that it shares its largest borders with.
Mm-hmm.
And I was put in once again, we arrived in country, did some in-country training, and then they kind of shipped us out to these remote areas that these government settlements, basically the government had given, quote unquote, given this land back to the indigenous communities to do slash and burn agriculture. So
you said slash and burn agriculture?
Slash and burn agriculture, where they're basically doing major deforestation in order to grow the traditional crop of yucca root,
mandioca root.
And so my partner and I were kind of placed at the end of this long red dirt road, and it was our summer, so it meant that it was winter in Paraguay, lots of rain, and the roads would wash out with each rain. And so there, we had a supervisor who was meant to come and visit us once a week and bring us mail and check on our health and wellness, but she was frequently unable to reach us because of the state of these rural roads. And we were out there once again doing dental hygiene education, doing community sanitation projects, attempting to engage the community around these latrines, projects with moderate success.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're partnering with the local public health agencies. So Red Cross would come out and do work with us, or various like non-governmental organizations that were based in the country were meant to be partnering with us as well. But there were a lot of long, lazy, quiet Paraguayan days and evenings. And so we learned, you know, I would hang out with my host mom in the kitchen that was made basically of, you know, all the walls were see-through because it was really just a little hut, and we would work over the open fire.
And what was the food like there in Paraguay?
Very basic. I mean, it was mandioca with every meal. So yucca root, boiled, fried,
mashed,
breaded, mashed, beef, you know, really weird cuts of beef. And
so they're big on beef in the way that like Argentina is?
Yes, Argentina and Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And then freshwater fish. And I don't exactly know where that came from because I never saw a river, but there was freshwater fish. That's what I remember. Yeah. And then beautiful, beautiful evening skies, just the most spectacular starlit nights that I'd ever seen in my life, because I'd never been that remote and you know, nobody had electricity. It was all, we have some battery powered lights, so they might run the TV off of a car battery, but nothing was illuminated. So these long, beautiful, quiet evenings is one of the things I really remember.
Marta, it sounds perfectly dreamy and beautiful.
Town on a boat from the southern islands, sailing to reach for a following sea. She was making for the trades on the outside,
off the wind on this heading like the Marquesas. You got 80 feet of a waterline, nicely making way in a noisy bar in Avalon. I tried to call you, but on a midnight watch I realized why twice you ran away. Think about it.
Think about how many times I have fallen. Spirits are using me, larger voices call.
Marta, you certainly paint a beautiful picture of Paraguay. And now we're going to go to another place. We've got two more places to talk about that you travel to. And one of them is the beautiful Oaxaca, which anybody that's any kind of a foodie in the entire world pines to go there, like myself. I would kill to go to Oaxaca and have some wonderful, beautiful food. I have a question for you just about food in general, which I don't generally talk about food so much on this show just because there's so many travel shows out there. I want to hear people's crazy experiences more than food. But mole is what Oaxaca is known for. And there are so many different kinds. And I was just curious, I'm sure you probably ate a lot of it, but is it also something that you learned to make because it's so time intensive?
Right. Yes, my time in Oaxaca, I had a particular affinity there because one of the great tales from my youth is my mom would always remind me that I was conceived in Oaxaca when she and my father were traveling there. So when I finally got an opportunity to visit and spend some time there with the Amigos program, by that point I had moved into a leadership role and I was an assistant project director and spent a lot of time in the city doing financial reports and purchasing supplies and things like that. I wasn't getting as much time out in the rural communities
with the people.
But I did visit all the beautiful food markets and sample amazing, delicious food and visit some of the other outlying communities. But my experience is that the folks who were preparing these amazing recipes weren't super keen to share the secrets with the gringa. Got to see all the raw ingredients. I got to see it being assembled.
And then they would take it, hide it, and put it together in a magical way.
So I think you and me, Megan, you and I should plan a trip to Oaxaca. And with my language skills and your charm, I bet we could find a way to learn how to make some mole negro.
I think that we could do it. I also have a good friend who I think that you met before, Joaquin, who lives in Guanajuato, and we could go with him and he could make that happen too. as the United States is a giant country with many different facets, so is Mexico, and very different foods and different personalities and attitudes and everything, just like it is here. What would be the biggest difference that you notice in like Oaxaca versus like central Mexico? I mean, they're very, go ahead.
The biggest difference I noticed was the strength and presence of the indigenous communities the further south that you go. I wasn't aware. So in central Mexico, at the time, it appeared to me that there was more of kind of a mestizo or a mixed culture between the Spanish and indigenous communities, but I wasn't seeing people wearing their traditional dress, or I wasn't hearing people speak the indigenous languages. But once I got into Oaxaca and Chiapas, I was much more aware that of the strength and resiliency of those indigenous communities the further south you go.
And do they, the indigenous communities, do they speak Spanish or do they have their own?
The sense I had was that it was a Spanish was the second language. Mm-hmm. So they may speak Zapoteco or some other, you know, there's like regional dialects of these indigenous languages. So unless they'd been educated in the city, my sense was that many communities were speaking the indigenous language as their first language and Spanish as their second language.
Got it. Okay. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Well, we don't have so much more time left, but I do want to touch for a minute on Chile because you were there for a very long time. And Marta and her beloved husband, Franco, who hails from Italy, they got married many years ago. How many years ago is it now?
10 years.
It's 10. Okay, so it's coming up on 10 years. And they got married in a place called Champuy in the Willamette Valley, which is so beautiful. And we all got to camp. Well, we stayed in a yurt, but, you know, camping was optional. But we go back occasionally when we can to this area every year with these guys, if time permits. And after a few cocktails, Marta likes to tell tales of her time in Chile. And I would love it if you'd share some with our guests.
Well, I had a close family friend who made it possible for me to visit Chile after I finished up my bachelor's degree. And I had studied some of the political economy and social history of Chile from the late 60s and 70s, and was aware of what was happening with the dictatorship and the political repression that they experienced through the 70s and 80s. And as it began to open up and they ousted the dictator, the opportunity came up for me to further my studies in sustainable development and community agriculture in a nonprofit organization that had been born out of these kind of isolated and repressive years of the dictatorship. And so I went down with my newly minted bachelor's degree and my idealistic hopes of engaging with this non-governmental organization and learning from inside on how to, you know, run a community service organization in Latin America. And while that didn't exactly play out as I had hoped, I made incredible connections with all of the folks who ran this beautiful farm on the outskirts of Santiago, and was befriended by a man named Segundo Fuensalida, who was the lead farmer and gardener for this research and education facility. And he, along with some of the other workers, were the ones who really took me in as a single young woman without any family, with thousands of miles away from home.
Yeah.
And he and his wife showed me so much love and support, while many of the other folks who were maybe of a different higher socioeconomic class, who had maybe more of an education, who were kind of the puppet masters and holding the purse strings of the organization, were not as welcoming or inclusive of me. It was really these kind of working class folks with really limited resources who were the ones who truly showed me the generosity and kindness of the Chilean people. And we were in this beautiful central valley of Chile with the Andes shooting up to the east, and then, you know, just a couple hour trip or less out to the Pacific Ocean. And although Santiago is a kind of the big metropolitan region and known for not having the best air quality, and had suffered a lot of damage during the dictatorship years, the rest of Chile, from north to south, is just an incredibly spectacular country to travel in. I like to compare it to the west coast of the U.S., but flipped upside down. So you start in the north in this desert region with the high desert of the Andes and the Atacama Desert, and then as you come down, you get more of that kind of central valley of California, grape growing region, mm-hmm. all of these incredibly beautiful, mystically charged locations. And then the further south you go, it feels more and more like the Pacific Northwest, and the temperate rainforests of the Olympic Peninsula. In fact, my understanding is that Chile, Olympic Peninsula, and New Zealand are the three of the only places that you find temperate rainforests that remain on the planet.
And Marta, are you still in contact with these people that you spent time with?
You know, you had asked me that in preparation, and I was reflecting, and I have not been able to sustain contact with my sweet family, my host families from Mexico and Paraguay. However, the folks that were my friends and my emotional support and my allies during my time in Chile, I have been able to reconnect through social media, and am in touch with them, and that's been a real blessing. So there are a handful of folks who I have been able to sustain contact with.
Well, I hope one day you get to go back and see these people again.
Yes.
Marta, I want to thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Megan.
Si no creyera en la locura de la garganta del sinsonte, si no creyera que en el monte se esconde el trino y la pavura, si no creyera en la balanza, en la razón del equilibrio, si no creyera en el delirio, si no creyera en la esperanza, si no creyera en lo que agencio, si no creyera en mi camino, si no creyera en mi sonido, si no creyera en mi silencio. Ay, qué cosa fuera la masa sin cantera, un amasijo hecho de cuerdas y tendones.
Marta, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Awesome. I just want to say again, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all your beautiful stories of your youth and Latin America and Latin American countries. It sounds so beautiful, and it makes me want to jump on a plane and go to Chile with you and have some fun.
Yes.
I'm serious, though. Let's go to Oaxaca.
I'm serious, too. I appreciate this opportunity to go down memory lane, and it sparked something in me to want to write about it more and celebrate the system more. So thank you.
You should. And I would love to have you back on, because Marta not only has knowledge of the of Latin America, but she also has spent a fair amount of time in India. And I'd like to have you come back on and we could talk about that.
Yes, that'd be wonderful.
All right, my dear. I will talk to you very soon, and happy anniversary to you and Franco.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Adios.
Bye. Adios. This is Megan Hastings, and this was the Cats and Jammer Follies. Thank you so much, Vashon, for joining us, and I hope you come back next week for a new tale from who knows where in this big world of ours.
Si no creyera en quien me escucha, si no creyera en lo...